Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Greg Solomon. I'm going to be chairing this very interesting session. Our speaker is Ruth Lisher. Ruth has been in the financial services industry for 25 years, originally starting her career in life insurance and superannuation, and then moving to general insurance in the last 15 years. She's been with Suncorp since 2001, primarily focusing on commercial lines of business, for which she has performed pricing and valuations across most of the portfolio, and is now working with the appointed actuary. In the last 12 months, Ruth has also been involved in the valuation side of Suncorp's life insurance business. Just a reminder, please, to put your phones on silent for the session. We will have time for Q&A afterwards. So, handing over to Ruth.
Thanks, Greg. And hello, everyone, and thanks for coming. 2 minutes before the bell went, there were about five people here, so I'm glad that a few more people turned up, because there's some very interesting sessions on at the same time, so I do appreciate your time. And I also know that the second day of a conference after a night of indulgence with the beer and the bubbles, it's also a challenge, especially after lunch. So hopefully the Barocca and the Panadol are working, and you can stay awake for the whole session. Originally, I was meant to be doing this presentation with Gloria Yu, and unfortunately, she couldn't make it today. But I do want to sincerely acknowledge her assistance on this presentation. Unfortunately, however, she couldn't make it, and I will be flying solo. So I do hope you bear with me for the period of time that we're going to be here. So, first of all, why do this subject? And as Greg alluded to in the introduction, my working life after my stint in superannuation was mostly general insurance, well, 100% general insurance. And then my employer, Suncorp, decided to do a very extensive reorganisation, and I found myself looking after a life insurance valuation team, as well as a general insurance valuation team. And I guess just through various conversations with people, we did think, well, how is this going to really work for the actuarial team? Because we could see operationally things were happening, but what was going to happen in the actuarial space? Hence, a few months ago, when the opportunity came up to talk at the summit, I put my hand up to do this. So, a little bit about the structure today. There we go. Yes, that's it. An introduction. I'll go through a little bit more about the introduction of the topic. I will talk about diversity of thinking, because that is the subject, really, of the summit, different ways of thinking. And then how does that flow through into streamlining between GI and life? So I know more generally ways of working are changing. Employers are demanding many different things from us. I know that you'll all be familiar with the catchphrases of being agile, flexible work practices, resiliency, elevating the customer. They're all very common terms that we hear, and as part of the actuarial community, we're involved in that change as well. So perhaps it's time to take stock of where we are. And we were using GI and life really as a bit of a case study on the possibilities. And finally, I will wrap up with a discussion about the implications, and I'm hoping for some spirited input from you guys at that point in time. Well, what's happening in the external environment? Lots of headlines up there. Obviously, the one that affected me more directly is Suncorp Group overhauls its business model. So a year or so, Michael Cameron announced that the life and general insurance operations were going to be merged into a single operational unit. And it flowed all throughout the organisation, including the actuarial area, with the prime focus really about customer elevation. In January 2017, Aviva in the UK merged its life, GI and health businesses, part of the digital push for customers. We've got Zurich, revamp, sees life and general insurance merger, and the language that was used there was simplification, efficiencies, agility, accountability, and of course we've got elevating the customer. Now, we can't forget CPS 220, which recognises the different risk management, the similarities of risk management practices across Life GI and the bank. And finally, of course, IFRS 17 finally released. And I imagine that if I was doing this particular session in 2 or 3 years' time, it will probably be quite different. But here we are, pre the implications of IFRS, so we have to get the perspectives at this point in time, at least. But before we get into the detail, I just want to take a step back, and I know that we've had lots of discussions about diversity over the last couple of days, and talking about the title, which is Two Sides of the One Coin. So, on one hand, for us, it's about finding the commonalities between GI and life, and how can we upskill so that we can take our skills across different areas of practices. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is actually how do we appreciate the differences and take advantage of the diversity between each, hoping to enhance the approaches that both sides use. I pinched this from a Deloitte paper. So I thank them. The pictures are, however, mine, and they're pretty lame in comparison to the ones that were on the printout, but that's all I could find in clip art. It talks about the different areas of diversity. The most common one, legacy, that we're all used to talking about and is fairly embedded, and that's really how we look and how we act, and it's about ethnicity, age, gender, sexuality. And it's considered in the paper to be at the basic level of understanding and appreciating diversity. And if we move up further into sort of more current times where we've got the 747, experiential diversity, and that's recognising the experiences of life and the differences that that can bring to the workforce. And finally, when we're in the rocket and we're shooting through the stratosphere, it's thought diversity. And this is recognising that every single one of us is an individual and we have unique characters and thought processes that can be brought and should be appreciated. Now, the advantages, I mean, obviously there has to be advantages to this of thought diversity. And again, this is from the Deloitte paper. The first one reduces the potential for groupthink or overconfidence. So the definition of groupthink is that there is a lack of individual, objective, critical analysis. I quite like a definition from a lady called Margaret Heffernan, and she describes groupthink as internally generated blindness. And I think that's a very, very good description, and I'm sure we've all been in circumstances where you can't see the wood for the trees and all you can see is what each other are talking about. Of course, new and more insights, another advantage. And the third point is about putting the right resources to solving the right problems. Another point that's not up there is being able to see new connections, and that's removing that blindness. So we went into putting this presentation together with the notion of these advantages that could be gained through diversity. And that was a key hypothesis, using life and GI as an example. And we did a survey. So is anyone here actually filled in the survey? No one? Well, thankfully, some people did fill it in. I was quite pleased by the respondents. There was around 100 people who filled it in. And if they were here, I would mightily thank them because it was a really long survey. And in retrospect, I could see by the time that they got to the end of it, they were quite weary because the response rates dropped. So it was a big effort to get the information. And thankfully, the survey was in two parts, and the second part was to feed into another presentation. Thankfully, the part on this presentation was up front. Because I'll probably be talking about how 10 people said something. So at least I've got 100 people. Okay, let's talk about who actually filled it in. So we sent it out through the Institute, and most of the people who filled it in were members of the Institute. We did invite people to send it on to their other work colleagues, and you can see a handful of people did. Not exactly a big enough sample size, but it was still nice to get input from people outside the actuarial community. And most people were from Australia and New Zealand, with the rest in Asia. We asked the respondents to just let us know from which type of organisations they came from, both in terms of size and area of practice. And again, I was really pleased with the distribution of the respondents here. We didn't really specify what small, medium and large was, thinking people could work that out, and it appears that they did. And a nice spread between the different areas of practice. Other was represented by bank, health insurance, wealth management and government. The other question that we asked to get an idea of the demographics was the number of years people have been working. And again, you can see we have we had a really good range of respondents, from those who are just starting their career to those who, I don't want to say at the end of their career, but are certainly enjoying longevity in the actuarial community. So good on them. All right. Now to their really exciting results. I guess I should have said up front, and I hope you're not disappointed, that this presentation, because it's too late to walk out now, this presentation isn't about comparing different methodologies between life and GI. It's about thinking about looking at the mindsets of people and how open we all are to looking at different areas of practice. And to put some context to that, we asked the respondents to tell us about what have they been doing in their career thus far in terms of different areas of practice, where they are at the moment, and what potentials they see for moving into different areas of practice. So this graph, it's good news, this graph. I was very happy about this. It's, first of all, green is past, blue is current, and the darker colour is future. And 1, 2, 3, 4 is the number of, 4+ is the number of practice areas. So if someone who is in their past worked in one practice area, then that's almost 40% of people. So whilst around half the people who responded in their current work are working in a single practice area, that means half aren't. And in the past, 40% have worked in one area, but 60% have actually moved around. Very pleasing. The other thing that was really good was you can see in the future there's only 30% of people who consider that they're likely to stay in their practice area, whereas a massive 70% of people are therefore going to try something new. And, you know, this is a positive move for everyone in the room, and I reflect on a couple of things that were said on the day. One from Julia Lessing, she was talking about the advantages of horizontal learning. It's not, you know, all about going upwards, sidewards. Experience is very good. So this supports the argument that she was putting forward. And perhaps it also supports the notion of being a generalist, using your skills to cross across many different practice areas. Now, drilling down a little bit further into the types of areas, so for those who work in a single practice area in the past now and potentially want to stay there, dominated by life and GI, and I wasn't too surprised about that. Those who work in two, it was the fact that the main practice area identified was GI. Now, while you can't see up on there, something else that was very interesting, and is almost an aside, but perhaps a point to take away, according to the respondents, when people are working in the two practice areas, for GI, data science was the other area that was most common. And in fact, of those who put down data science as a future potential, and there were quite a lot of them, they more than twice the times considered the link with GI rather than life insurance. So I found that very interesting, and perhaps something for the life insurance industry to consider, that the connection with data science and life insurance is just not as strong as what it is for GI, based on what these respondents said, at least. But something to take away, I would say. So if we turn our minds to those people who have moved into different areas, why did they change? Two main areas: broaden opportunity and broaden experience and opportunity. When I looked at this, I thought, okay, I have said to myself, well, opportunity, is that a reactive stance? And is broadening your experience a proactive stance? And if that's the case, then does it mean the reason that most people move, it's not necessarily a deliberate action to broaden your experience, but more so something gets plonked in front of you and you'll give it a go, which is fine, but does it speak to the level of how we consider our careers? They happen by accident, perhaps. And I do have to stick my hand up and say that is basically what's happened to me my whole career. So I'm not a good example of being proactive, but perhaps for the people who are at the start of their career, maybe look forward to being in the green section rather than in the blue section, based on the topic of, you know, thinking differently. That would be my recommendation. And then if we consider why people move in the future, well, this is an even starker reason. If I can again classify future trends as being reactive, and the blue part about being career development. So once again, do you think we're sitting back and waiting for something to happen before we move? And the most common selection of why would you move, what's in the future trends, it's all about data science. So what the hell was happening before data science? It's like people have suddenly been awoken, and prior to that it was life, GI. But it's a good thing. However, again, I'm thinking that we're a little bit lacking on the proactive side of things. And do you think that we might need a catalyst to make us move, and perhaps data science is that catalyst? So that sort of set the scene for people's mindsets, where they've been and why they've moved and maybe why they will move in the future. So now I look at GI and life as a subset, a case study of this scenario, and we asked the respondents to, firstly, in their own organisations, and obviously not everyone was able to respond to this, but those who did, is there any level of integration between GI and life across the entire value stream of their organisation? And then secondly, we asked them, well, what's the potential that you see? And these were the results. So the blue is current and the green is future. One on the y-axis is low, two is medium, and three is high. This was a bit sad. Current is just popping over low, but the green is really only reaching medium for data warehouse and staff management, so very practical areas. So what that says to me is that, well, it's very clear what it says, that there's not a high level of vision in terms of the potentials of integrating GI and life from the respondents' perceptions at the moment. Now, again, I noticed, I mentioned earlier in the presentation about the impact of IFRS, and that surely will be a huge catalyst to make this change. So in a few years' time, I'm sure this graph will look very different, but if we're talking about do we need a catalyst to change, well, that's probably going to be it, and without it, would have anything happened? So do the respondents think that there would be any advantages? Again, pleasantly surprised by the results, and you see the top response there is actually cross-pollination of ideas. which is almost at odds to the numbers earlier about why move, because Borden experience wasn't the first choice, it was opportunity. But still, pleasing that it's to think that it was one of the most common responses, that it's an opportunity to find out new stuff from different people. The practical items were, of course, up there, efficient use of resources and the infrastructure. Broaden staff career was good. But, you know, great news that it was from a perspective of cross-pollination. I liked that. So why hasn't it really happened yet? Or why isn't it perceived, like a couple of slides ago, that there's much potential for it? So there's got to be some obstacles. That was the next question. Holy hell, I'm rushing through this. Well, this is good because you'll be able to go have another cup of coffee. Respondents' view of the obstacles faced by organisations. Okay. The biggest item is everyone's too busy. I can relate to this. Not enough potential from integrating, and we saw that in a couple of slides ago where there was a marginal improvement advantage considered. Again, it's probably that we need a catalyst to make it happen. It wasn't perceived that there was enough benefit in doing this and putting the effort in. So I again came back to maybe we're not capitalising on the potential that exists. And I keep on, you know, I pondered a while about what the conclusion of this presentation was going to be. It's quite different from when I started, and I keep on coming back to this proactive versus reactive way that we are potentially in the Institute, and reflecting again on a couple of things that I heard on day one. Julia again mentioned, do we have a rather fixed education system that silos us and perhaps doesn't lend itself to a broader way of thinking? And Jenny Lyon, in her opening address, asked us to be flexible in our thinking, maintain an outward focus. Audette said, step out of your tribe. That's a fantastic expression. And Juliet Burke spoke about the collective intelligence. So I think there's a massive amount of opportunity, but we're not seeing it yet. So what can we do about that? And since the whole theme of the summit is to think differently, when I look back at the obstacles, we don't have time, there's not enough inertia. Well, having a conversation with someone doesn't actually take that much time, and it doesn't cost anything as well. So I know that up to this point in time, I've not been to a summit. I've only been to the GI seminar, so I kept myself in that general insurance silo. And it may be vice versa for people in the life insurance industry as well and general insurance, but sure enough, if we don't talk to each other and explore different avenues, then our minds will not be opened up. So it's about being proactive. It's being proactive in your career, and it's about being proactive in exploring different ideas. And nothing will change unless we make a change. And a record time, 25 minutes, I'm done. Thank you. When I practiced that, it did take a whole extra 10 minutes, so I whizzed through that at the speed of lightning. Does anyone have any questions?
And yet, when you have the questions, if you can please go to the microphone. This is being recorded. Please introduce yourself. Thank you.
Hi.
You're right.
As we traverse, I. On this slide here, I was quite interested. The responses that you've got there that you've categorised, were they answers that you gave people to tick? Or?
Yeah, we did. And you could pick more than one as well.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is about mindset, isn't it?
Yeah.
There wasn't anything I could see from there that related specifically to sort of attitude and mindset and that being the obstacle to change happening?
So Do you think that there wasn't? Yeah, I think when I read the responses, the one of no incentive or inertia, I guess it's the danger of when you're setting questions, you implicitly believe that they're meant to portray a certain answer. And to me, a couple of those were meant to reflect attitude, which I have read into the responses myself. But good point. It may have been interpreted very differently by the respondents.
Hi, Robert Kerr.
Hi.
I haven't got so much of a question as just some comments. So I guess when I started my actual career a number of years ago, I guess there weren't, at that stage, there wasn't any real actual degrees and stuff going around much at any of these universities. Most people joined an insurance company and they were moved around departments, and I started at Aviva, actually at Norwich Union, and most people went through 4 or 5 years before they qualified, and they were moved literally between different areas. So it was quite common for people to go through, you know, 3 or 4 practice areas before they even got qualified. And I guess things are a bit different now, that a lot of people are coming out and qualifying very, very quickly, and perhaps they don't have that opportunities perhaps to do that. And it was quite interesting because it also meant that you understood a bit more about some of the other practice areas, and you built up relationships with other teams that you, if you needed an expertise in a different field, you knew what there was, what they could do, and a bit better, and you knew who to go and speak to. So it's I just don't know if maybe the change of the education systems and how things are happening have maybe made it a bit harder maybe than it perhaps used to be.
I went through the old-fashioned education system of doing the UK subjects, but I guess my experience is still a little bit different. Having worked in Brisbane, I stayed in a little bit in life insurance, which I only vaguely remember, and mostly in superannuation and then a big chunk in GI. So, and there were a lot of years in those. I wasn't exactly moving around a lot. But the question, though, I would have for you is, was the benefit of the knowledge that the individuals gained in their different practice areas shared in a way that was more enlightening than just sort of slightly different experience, so different mindsets? Did you see that there were different mindsets, or was it just a bunch of analytical people moving around into different analytical areas?
I think experiences were helpful, because you actually have sort of taking different ways.
Yeah.
You saw different techniques being used, apart from like how long we're going to use the technique, where the way of thinking about things and how things can be different.
Yeah. That's very valuable. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Leon from Covermore Travel Insurance. Thank you for the insightful and thought-provoking presentation.
Oh, you're welcome.
Really enjoyed that. So just a few my personal observations. So we mentioned briefly around culture. Like in my organisation, I found it really interesting that people were very, they didn't like picking up the phones, and people kind of used emails as a way of like listing, dumping all their information, and then they'll do like a mass email out. So what we talked about in our teams was, look, I think the number one way to do things when you're collaborating is just to walk over and have a chat with your colleague. Having that human interaction and then being able to see your body language and expression, that's really important. And where email comes in, I think, is when you walk back to your desk and you go, all right, let me just summarize what we talked about and to see if we're on the same page, and then do that. So that's the first observation. The second one is, in the absence of an actuarial community in your organization, I think the idea of knowledge broking is very important. So we all know what brokers do. They extract maximum value out of, like, you know, the relationship between the between the organization and the clients. I think it's in our kind of duty to also be that conduit to transfer information around. So my humble suggestion is just for everyone to take a proactive approach in doing that, because it's funny, because if you transfer one bit of information, you might get back six. and you might identify other people in your organization, not necessarily yourself, who might benefit from those six nuggets of gold. And then the last thing is, if you're working for a conglomerate and there's both life insurance actuaries and GI insurance actuaries, you are your own kind of biggest obstacle, right? So if you just kind of put yourself, it might be an uncomfortable situation, but just go out talking to the other side, you'll find a lot of benefit in that. So thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Did you want to comment that? Are you seeing similar stuff as well? People not talking as people?
Oh, okay. So I'll share a little bit of the experience that we've had at Suncorp. And the caveat is that these are my personal views, not those of the company. So we've had this new structure in place for 12 months. And the operational changes that happened outside the actuarial team were probably very easy. So there's been the system, single payroll systems, etc. All the back office sort of admin stuff is all now merged, and that makes sense. It's easy to do. Claims teams have also been merged. So we previously had personal injury claims teams, and now that personal injury team includes the life insurance teams. And finance, reporting, they're all merged. Capital actuarial team is now a single team, and the valuation team is a single team. Pricing remains separate. So my experience has been, well, first of all, not having enough knowledge in life insurance, I am sort of biased about my experience. But it is quite amazing to see people who have come through the education system in these different areas, and I am fairly sure that most people have either been in GI their whole career or in life their whole career, but they do think differently and don't naturally have a desire to talk to each other in terms of work-related items. And breaking down those barriers has been a challenge, and we are really at the beginning of making it work. I can see that it needs to come from the top, from the leaders, to be able to make the change happen, because we get stuck in that I'm too busy, I'm too busy, I'm too busy frame of mind. And I think one of the bigger differences between life and GI is the huge regulatory requirements of life insurance versus general insurance. And I was at the topic about deep dives in life insurance. Using that as an example, deep dives in general insurance are just par for the course. The concept of deep dives in life insurance, first of all, you have to get your experience analysis done first. That's the requirement to be able to set your rates. And potentially the deep dives is something you do if you've got spare time. But it's not quite like that in GI. So the mindsets are just different because of the regulatory requirements of both. But it need not be like that. But time is needed, I think, before we can get things really cooking with gas between the two teams. But I'm very hopeful that will happen. But it's a challenge. I'll be honest, it's a challenge.
Ruth, just a question. You were talking about people thinking differently. Yeah. Now, I sort of trying to envision how the two sides might talk to each other. I imagine life people maybe think more long term and concepts like discounting, and the non-life side, it might be a bit more, I don't know, severity frequency type thinking. What kind of concepts do you see when they come to the table are different?
Yeah, the thinking is that, you know, in general insurance, most of the business that we deal with is short tail, so if it's over and done with in 2 or 3 years, and even the long tail isn't long tail in terms of what you've got for life insurance. So it's GI, and maybe that's why GI has developed at I apologise for the life insurance people, at a faster rate than the life insurance space. It's because there's, I always get this, you know, we project our cash flows all the way out, we've got to project them all the way back, and that's why profit takes so long to run. And it is just that way of thinking, that things take longer in life insurance than they do in GI. I don't know, does anyone else have that an experience that they're brave enough to share? None of my team are here. So what happens in this room stays in this room apart from the damn recording. We'll just wipe that part.
So Darren Robinson from MLC. I've definitely observed the same thing. GI has definitely moved a lot quicker than life insurance, particularly around analytics. And I think that's partly because of the nature of the business. So with GI, it's quite amiable to that type of analysis where you take all of the factors, you put it in together and it tells you, tells you something. Whereas in life insurance, there's many more human things involved.
Yeah.
So I actually think there's the benefits for life insurance are much greater, but they're probably 5 or 10 years out, maybe not that far out. But you've actually got to be able to do things like look at Facebook and compare the number of positive to negative words. You've got to be able to work out whether that person has got a resilient mindset or not. And that's not as open yet. I imagine it will be in the future, but I think that's probably why life insurance, probably also because everything takes longer as well. But all those things are coming down as well, so that issue will disappear with time.
Yeah, probably. Thanks for that input. And it was interesting, though, that the connection that people had between data analytics and GI, much, much stronger. But the fact that you just said that, you know, it's by virtue of different products, etc., I wonder if that has just implicitly meant that there's not an expectation that things will move faster, therefore things don't, and it's a bit self-fulfilling. I don't know. I do appreciate that there's a stack more complexity in life insurance than general insurance, and I apologise to the general insurance people for oversimplifying what you do. It's probably just because I'm more aware about it.
Next, Matt, you've focused on the differences between life and GI in the way of thinking. Do you want to comment about the differences between perhaps pricing and valuation, if there's any sort of differences in thinking styles that we can learn from?
It's very similar, though. The pricing, of course, in general insurance can be done as fast as it can and implemented the next day. But I understand in life insurance that's just not possible with the legacy books. So whilst, you know, if we happen to observe that maybe some repricing is needed in a particular life insurance, of course I just say to myself, well, why don't you just do it? But it's not that easy. That's from an implementation point of view, and I also do wonder whether that has therefore just slowed things down. Because of all the requirements and the expectations of consumers that you're not going to change the premium over the life of the policy. The methodologies, very different. And I can't really add too much on that. I've only seen sort of the edges of the experience investigations that feed into the pricing. But GI has moved a long way through its very statistical packages that are available and used, stacks of different techniques. I don't know whether anyone else can offer an opinion on whether life insurance pricing has changed much. What the new FSC tables came out recently-ish, and prior to that, it was how many years? A long time. See, things move slowly.
Gary,
I'm Gary from Aon Benfield. So I joined Aon about 10 months ago as a life reinsurance broker. So life reinsurance broking is quite new to the industry, whereas GI reinsurance broking has been there for a long time. So some observations for myself. Couple of things. I think there's more, I wouldn't say outsourcing, but more specialization within the GI operation. Again, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. For example, because the broker involvement, usually you have the reinsurance slip ready at inception, signed at inception, which is, I don't know, in the life industry, which is, you know, quite challenging and is usually sort of executed during the six-month grace period. Again, my own observation on some of the things. And I think products are quite different. I mean, again, speaking from a reinsurance point of view, life reinsurance, quota share reinsurance, you've got to understand the underlying products really well. Whereas on the GI side, a lot of natural catastrophe cap covers and things like that. So I think that in terms of the understanding of the risk, again, I'm not saying it's not important, but we do a lot of analytics around the concentration of on the GI risk accumulation. But I think there's more to understand on the life side in terms of the actual products. So my observation again, just in terms of reinsurance broking placement, on the life side it takes longer.
Mm.
I think there's some observations I've made.
Obviously, again, the completely different products, and the fact that the GI, you get another crack at the reinsurance contractor in a year, whereas you're on the hook for a lifetime with the life insurance reinsurance. So there's a lot of modelling that goes on in coming up with appropriate treaty arrangements for general insurance, and I don't know what happens, whether there's optimal reinsurance that considered as part of life insurance. I'm actually not aware of what happens on that side, except I know that they're different.
John Smith. I'd agree that there are quite a few product differences between life and general, but from what I've seen in this part of the world, there has been a tendency for some general products to have some features of longer term contracts. So you think of motor, where you have no claims discount that's guaranteed for life, and then you think on the other side, some life products have got some features that are more short term, particularly on the group side, where you have that sort of every 3 years you've got rate reviews. So there has been some trends to get closer, but there's still quite a way to go.
Yeah, it would be very interesting, I'm sure, when Suncorp did its reorg and they're thinking about talking to reinsurers, that they must be thinking that they can talk to one person at a reinsurer rather than two. See how that goes.
John Bullman. I think one of the things you talk about, the life insurance being slower, and it's true. I've been in the life insurance industry for a long time. Is what's been mentioned earlier is legacy, but it's not necessarily the legacy products, but legacy systems.
Oh, yeah.
Life insurance industry is still working in the 80s, all the computer systems. So therefore, all the data is recorded on systems that don't store the information you need to do the analysis a lot of your techniques need.
And such a huge investment.
And it's such a huge investment. It's not a particularly profitable industry that where people are looking to invest a lot of money, and so it's probably not going to change so quickly. So you do need people who can deal with poor data and so on. And there's been lots of times on whiz-bang analytical systems where the data's, in a lot of cases, just rubbish.
Yeah. I hear where you're coming from, and a lot of people do in this room.
And if I can add a comment, I think that's part of the challenges with IFRS implementation on the life side rather than the non-life side. The data just doesn't... It doesn't exist in many cases. I think we have time for one more question.
Trang Duncanson. I just wanted to pick up that point you've got up there, lack of catalyst from top management. And I think you started talking about IFRS 17 as well.
Yeah.
In your position where you've actually got a GI and life team, that is just an amazing opportunity to actually start to embed some of these lessons across the two teams. So I think that's a start, because I think unless you get it from top management and you have an opportunity, I think, in your role as well, and if we have more of those opportunities, then we'll start to see a lot of that sharing. So IFRS 17 is a great, great, great way to start it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Fun times ahead. Well, thank you, everyone, for attending this afternoon. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Good flights back to your hometowns.
Thank you. And before we show our appreciation, just a couple of quick things. Please fill out your feedback on the app. It's very easy. You just press the buttons. And there's still some prizes available, so run around and hunt those down. And again, Ruth, thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Thank you.